Okay, I don't know what the hell you have planned for later.
Wow. Well, as you've been catching up on this hour, we've been talking about Land and Justice with Will Nichols and Amy German from The Nation magazine. And this is Land and Justice. Just to give you an idea of what we have coming up here in the next hour or so, we have Gunarji, who's going to be sharing a radio broadcast from organized with this past Sunday with National Aboriginal Day, and she's going to be speaking with Illinois musician and artist Russell Wallace. We have an interview with Michelle Bork from CKCU. And I really like that name, CKCU. And, of course, in the final hour, we have our elders. We wanted to end this radiothon.
This is Radio Freethinker, reminding you to always look on the bright side of life.
Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey,
always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
Okay, so welcome to Radio Freethinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, the freethinking historian.
Hello, and I'm Don, the philosopher of political science.
And I'm Rob, the whistling maniac and cognitive psychologist.
And I'm Elon, the computer science nerd. And I'm going to tell you guys about what happened this day in history. In 1972, the Watergate scandal. U.S. President Nixon and White House Chief of Staff H.R. Haldeman were taped talking about using the CIA to obstruct the FBI's investigation into the Watergate break-ins. And as you all know, this conspiracy didn't get very far as Nixon was caught and...
So you admit it was a conspiracy. The government is out to get us. Well, doesn't this just prove all those other ones?
Actually, well, it looks like the government was out to get itself.
Yeah, that's more of the case. It was a crime against another party, not so much the people.
It's also interesting, it was the media out to get Richard Nixon, which I think is a common thing that people don't think of in terms of other conspiracy theories. Let's say something like the moon landing or the 9/11 conspiracy. You would think, like, if there was any chance to try to find out what happened, like, all the media would be going and trying to catch what happened to get a big scoop and, like, make a lot of money, whatever journalist.
Actually, it's even more delicious than that, I think, because the main lead into this was a guy named Deep Throat, who is actually an internal, someone who's kind of part of the conspiracy and in the government, which shows you, too, that, I mean, even in a conspiracy, people just can't keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially someone named Deep Throat.
You think you would, you know, notice that before you hired the guy. What's your name? Deep Throat? Okay. No, I'm Big Mouth, you know, Blabberface, whatever.
So I think it's interesting to see an example. We've talked about other conspiracy theories before, but here's one that actually was a conspiracy, but of course they didn't make it too far. Unlike those UFO sightings.
Well, yeah, I was just noting, Elon, that in 1947, Kenneth Arnold made the first widely reported, I'm not exactly sure what qualifies as that, UFO sighting near Mount Rainier, Washington.
Ooh.
Now, of course, this goes right in with this Watergate thing, because a lot of people think that government has made contact with aliens and is covering up the Roswell being the most notable of those genre of conspiracies.
So then I guess if you think about how many people have to be in on that conspiracy, all the witnesses that saw it, all the scientists, everyone in over 50 years, no one has yet to point the gun and, like, you know, spill the beans. So I guess so far.
And actually, it's even bigger than that, because not only do you have all the people on planet Earth, but if it's aliens, you have to make sure all of them are in on the conspiracy too.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any alien from another planet that's just like, man, let's just tell the Earthlings already. And I was like, no, we have to be sneaky.
Well, they were going to, but then they saw an episode of X-Files and saw how the government mistreats aliens and decided not to.
Well, let's hopefully those aliens will, you know, email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And I want to take this opportunity awesome. to remind our listeners there's a CFI event this Saturday, June 27th, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock at the Bottle Tipper Restaurant. It's called History, Identity, and the First French Text. It's a talk by Courtney Booker of the UBC History Department. Of course, I will be there because I'm the freethinking historian, and I assume someone else will go as well.
Probably. We'll see.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, there you go, folks. Check it out.
Oh, and I guess I want to make a quick shout-out to my computer science nerd friends over at Isaacs Building at UBC, enjoying Tuesday tea and listening to Radio Free Thinker. I hope you're enjoying the pie I got you, and keep listening.
You are such nerds.
Oh,
That's great. Well, let's go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with our interview with Rebecca Watson of The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
So, joining us now on Radio Free Thinker, we have writer, essayist, and creator of SkepCheck, and co-host of the popular podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, Ms. Rebecca Watson. Rebecca, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you, Ethan.
And so you're the creator of SkepCheck. Tell us about this organization and why you decided it was needed.
Well, SkepCheck started a few years back when there were just about a dozen of us ladies who happen to be skeptical on our own little private forum. And we thought it'd be fun to put together a tongue-in-cheek kind of nudie calendar. And it wasn't anything too salacious, but it was sexy and fun. And we thought that we could raise some money to send some fellow women to a big skeptical conference called The Amazing Meeting, which takes place each year in Las Vegas. So we did, and I headed up the operation, and it was so much more of a success than any of us could have possibly hoped for. And I got so much wonderful, such a great response from people who said, wow, it's great to see that there are actual other women out there who are critical thinkers, because they don't seem to be very prominent right now. I had set up SkepCheck just as a site to sell the calendars from, but we got so much traffic that I figured we might as well turn it into something real. So that's when we started doing monthly essays, which then evolved into what is now up at skeptcheck.org, which is a daily blog that's updated actually now several times a day, and we have about a dozen writers, all women except for one lucky male. And we blog about, you know, everything, skepticism and science and pseudoscience and feminism and the whole gamut. So it's been a really fun ride thus far. And the site is, the site's very popular beyond my wildest expectations. So I couldn't be happier.
That's excellent. And there does appear to be a need for that, because there is a blitz of anti-critical thinking aimed, I think, especially at women through magazines and Oprah and other sources like that. What's your take on all of this?
Well, you know, I could rant for hours about Oprah, because she drives me nuts. I gave an entire talk back in January at London Skeptics in the pub, and it pretty much... it summed up everything I hate about Oprah. She basically takes every pseudoscience that could possibly be directed at women, and she promotes the hell out of it. And it's frustrating to see someone with so much influence use it so poorly. I'm not sure if there's more crap aimed at women, or if it's just that I'm hyper aware of it, but one way or the other, it's not addressed very often amongst the more prominent skeptics groups. I think that groups like, you know, Skeptical Inquirer magazine and Skeptic magazine, I think they're fantastic. They do a great job. But they tend to hit things like UFOs or JFK, conspiracy theories, Ponzi schemes. Mm-hmm. And I find those things fascinating. But they tend to skip over the particular female-oriented pseudoscience crap until it reaches the mainstream, like, for instance, the anti-vaccination campaign, which started out as very focused on mothers. And, you know, now it's unfortunately huge, thanks to people like Oprah and Jenny McCarthy promoting it. And I don't know if your listeners are fully aware of everything with the is anti-vaccination. Is that a big deal in Canada?
It's not a concern, I think, to parents so much, but it is. We are very well aware of it, and we have been trying to do what we can to warn our listeners that if this ever does come to Canada, it needs to be fought, because it's very dangerous. And the thing that disturbs me the most is not so much that it's out there, is that Jenny McCarthy is convincing people with arguments like her mummy instinct.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that talk I gave at London Skeptics in the pub, it was the topic was women's intuition, because I've always felt that women's intuition it's basically the opposite of male logic. That's the way it sort of came about. The idea is that men use hard logic and common sense, while women have alternate mystical ways of knowing things. Their pretty girly minds can't handle hard logic, so they have to have this kind of sixth sense. And it's that idea that has evolved into the mommy instinct, and it really just... it gets on my nerves so badly every time I hear Jenny McCarthy say something along those lines. And it's not just because she's going against everything we know from a scientific standpoint about vaccines and how they do not cause autism. There's no evidence to suggest vaccines cause autism. She says that her mommy instinct tells her otherwise. That's bad enough. But it actually has there's a subtler problem with it that I think is often missed, which is that she makes other mothers feel like they're not good enough. And to give you an example of that, I found a fantastic essay on, I think it was about.com's autism editor. She has a child with autism, and she writes about how confused she was when she first found out that her child had autism. She didn't know who to trust, what kind of treatments to give her child. And she was basically lost at sea, and so she did as much research as she could. She made the best decisions that she could, but she was never 100% certain, because it's very difficult to see your child go through something like that. But then she would turn on the television, and she would see Jenny McCarthy say, well, the doctors told me to do this, this, and this, but my mommy instinct told me otherwise, so I stayed strong, and I stayed true to my mommy instinct, because I knew what to do. And here's this woman struggling with the same problems, and suddenly she's filled with uncertainty. And so she thinks that maybe she's not a good enough mommy. Maybe Jenny McCarthy has this superpower. Maybe every other mother has this superpower that she suddenly lacks. So it's kind of a way of making other women feel like they're not good enough just because they don't have this supernatural power that Jenny McCarthy claims to have. So there's a lot to hate about Jenny McCarthy, and I think that there are a lot of there are a lot of problems with what she's saying that go unnoticed like that.
Mm. She is a definite problem to the skeptical community. Do you think that it's made worse by the fact that there's almost this distrust of science, and it isn't natural that natural medicine is better than regular science? How do you think we should promote the image to make it more trustworthy to people?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I remember I used to live in Seattle, very near you, actually, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, and I was an activist for a living, so I was surrounded by people who had they were very untrusting of the man, of government, and of science. And I did run into people who had children and wouldn't have them vaccinated because they didn't trust this large conspiracy. And the problem is that, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry, it's not really doing us any favors, because honestly, the pharmaceutical industry is filled with a bunch of jerks. And, I'm just going to venture a guess and say that as a Canadian, you probably don't even see the half of it, because when I was in Seattle, I saw hundreds of people crossing the border to get cheaper medicine because the pharmaceutical industry was jacking up the prices over here just to pay for their marketing. Mm-hmm. And so, it's difficult to defend an industry like that. So I think that the main problem is turning it from trying to defend these faceless corporations that really are focused on making a buck, and pointing out the thousands and thousands of doctors who are people who have families, who aren't, making millions off of this drug. They're not just trying to promote a drug so they can get rich. These doctors are actual people. And I think the fantastic thing is when we see those doctors stepping forward and making their case and putting a face, a human face, on the issue. And when we see the devastation caused by people who aren't getting vaccinated, when we see children coming down with measles, it puts a face on the issue. It's no longer about industries trying to make a buck. It's about a real problem. And I'm hoping that will somehow convince people to take a look at the evidence. But there's no cure-all. I think we're all just doing the best we can to get out there and educate the public.
So do you think that it would help if media outlets like Larry King or Oprah had more skeptics on their show, and as opposed to Jenny McCarthy and pseudoscientific practitioners?
I do. I don't think that they will, because right now they don't see those people making the money. And I've pretty much given up on Oprah. Recently, we had Newsweek come out with a huge cover story all about the dangerous pseudoscience that she's been pushing, which is fantastic. It's so good to see mainstream media picking up on what the blogs and the podcasts have been going on about for years. But Oprah responded to the Newsweek article, and her response was embarrassing. It was all about how she trusts her audience to go out and do the research for themselves. completely ignoring her, you know, completely one-sided pseudoscientific argument, and ignoring the fact that with, you know, a single recommendation, she can send millions of housewives out to Borders to pick up the latest, you know, James Frey novel, and then in the next instant destroy James Frey on national television.
Wow.
And you know, it's things that like that that just, you know, it gave me hope when she, with the whole James Frey thing, when she turned around and eviscerated him. It made me think, well, maybe one day she'll do the same to John Edward or Sylvia Brown or someone else that, you know, she's actually had on her show and promoted. Maybe she'll turn around and say, you know what, I was fooled. This guy's a fraud. But it's been too long, and I've lost hope. So at this point, I think we just need to destroy Oprah.
I think she is retiring, although I have heard that she's going to replace her with Jenny McCarthy in her own show. That would be...
Well, yeah, she did just give Jenny McCarthy... They signed a huge deal for Jenny to look into getting her own show, which is disturbing. But there has been a good campaign of writing letters to Oprah in order to try to convince her otherwise. And the other nice thing is that all of the bad publicity that both Jenny and Oprah have been getting lately, I suspect that they're starting to have a real effect. There was the Newsweek article just this week. I kind of like gossip blogs sometimes. So today on Perez Hilton, I read that Oprah got knocked out of the number one spot for daytime television ratings. Judge Judy beat her for the first time. Judge Judy. And also, Oprah got bumped from the number one spot on the Forbes list of most influential celebrities. That is now Angelina Jolie. So, you know, as slight as all that sounds, it's about baby steps, and I do hope that this is the beginning of a very large fall for Oprah.
Well, on that hopefully happy note, we're just about out of time. So once again, Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Free Thinker. We really appreciate you stopping by, and hopefully we can chat again in the future.
Oh, I hope so, Ethan. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a bat. It's a float plane. No, it's the Evaporators.
Soaring in and bringing supplies on June 23rd,
the Evaporators launched their new 7-inch A Wild Pair. Andrew WK joins them at Neptune Records for a live performance from 4 to 6 p.m.
And if that's not enough, head over to the Biltmore at 8 for an encore performance with the Vicious Cycles.
It'll make you want to fly.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker, so thanks to Rebecca Watson, that was fantastic. And now we're going to be talking about...
Internet policing laws. Last week, two new laws were presented to the House, and actually the House is, I guess they've been passed. I'm not sure about that now, because the House has went out. Anyhow, let's continue on. There are two laws that were introduced the other day. One's called the Technical Assistance for Law Enforcement in the 21st Century Act.
Or TAEFL 21 for short.
And Investigative Powers for the 21st Century Act. Now, note, it's the 21st century, so these weren't good last century, and they won't be good next century. They're just making sure you know it's the 21st century.
So the government's only going to spy on our internet activity for the next...
100 years.
90 years.
Oh, yeah. So what do these laws do? One of them, the Technical Assistance Law, requires that companies providing network services such as internet, VoIP, voice over internet, cell phones, and other wireless type services, ensure that the communications can be captured and intercepted by police. It also allows the people to obtain personal information about the customers, including names, addresses, emails, IP addresses, etc., without a warrant. The other one, the Investigation Powers ones, allows the police to track criminals using his cell phone or obtain routing information for electronic communication, allows police to remotely activate existing tracking devices that are found in some cars and devices such as cell phones. That's usually through the little chips that you have your SIM card. Right. It also makes it an offense for two or more people to agree to or arrange child sexual exploitation by means of telecommunications, and makes it illegal to possess a computer virus for the purpose of committing an offense of mischief, even if that virus has not been released.
So basically turning us into an electronic surveillance state.
So what if you just have the virus on your computer, but you didn't make it or anything?
Well, again, this is where it does have the thing about committing an offense of mischief. So is the onus on you to prove, hey, you know, I got infected. I don't know where it came from, right?
Never mind that. I mean, what about rights of privacy?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of these seem to imply that you are guilty. There is, in the bill, there is a provision that all the requests to get this information, there has to be a written request. And those requests are examined a couple of times a year. But all this review is done after the fact. Right.
Well, I guess the question is whether this surveillance will be useful.
So, I'm sorry, what is the point of this, though? Are they trying to cut down on piracy? Are they trying to, you know, look into potential terrorism via the internet?
Yeah, is there a particular reason?
Okay. Well, from the research that I did, part of the reason for creating this is there's a Convention on Cybercrime Treaty, which was passed by Canada, the European Union, the U.S., and a few other countries like Japan and that, which is intended to help facilitate international investigations and modernize the investigation of crimes in that in a standardized way.
So that makes sense. Like, you want to modernize the way we investigate crimes. What I don't understand is why they're doing away with the whole warrant process. Like, we had this law before, seemed to work, where, like, if you wanted to investigate someone, you first have to get a warrant to be allowed to, like, look in his house or, like, check his phone records. So why all of a sudden is it that you don't need a warrant if you want to look at their internet activity? That's what I don't get.
Do they view internet activity as, like, different?
Well, and that's the thing. If they do get a warrant, they can do all this. There was another act that's already on the books called the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act that allows the police to go in and subpoena all this information, provided they have a warrant or if there is a government subpoena. And it even has a situation where if it's an emergency, if someone's life or if there's the ticking time bomb, if you remember our show last week about 24, if there's a ticking time bomb and they have to get it, and they can get the information and get sort of a post-dated warrant for it, right? So, I mean,
but
it's out there.
But they still had to get a warrant. Why do you need to be able to do ISP-level surveillance without a warrant? I don't understand that. I mean, has anyone here ever been searched, you know, electronically?
Well, again, and this basically allows them to come in and without any just cause. I mean, the whole point of a warrant is it is. In fact, the BC Civil Liberties Association has said, and I quote, "This bill is a Trojan horse to expand police powers and essentially allow for a data grab. Police, they don't provide a good reason why they need these new powers. You have to show us that a warrant process is not working." And they say that they haven't shown it.
Well, this kind of sounds like the airport security that, you know, if we think you're a terrorist, we're going to search you. They don't even need cause. They just have to look at you and go, that person looks suspicious.
Well, I have a personal anecdote. I remember one time when I was driving from the States back into Canada, I was stopped at the border and they took my laptop and they decided they were going to search my laptop for child porn. For, like, obviously, no, I hope that I don't look like the type of person who was carrying child porn on the laptop, but even if I was, there's obviously no evidence.
You look like the person that watches normal pornography.
Thank you, Rob. And it was very frustrating. They, like, made me sit down. They treated my laptop with no respect. Like, my girlfriend knows I don't even let her touch my laptop. And these guys were, like, grabbing it from the base and waving it all around. And the only reason... Well, nothing. I was about to say the only reason they didn't find... There wasn't any. But they wouldn't have found it anyways, because it turned out that the border officers didn't know how to use a Mac computer. So they came to me and was like, how do I search for an image file? But aside from that, it was a very frustrating
and
situation.
And they didn't even, you know, ask... You didn't ask for a warrant. They didn't have to provide one or anything. They didn't even have to provide
a right. Though I think that's different. I think at the border, if you're trying to get into a country, you pretty much give up most of your rights. Or at least that's what I know about it.
You must really didn't like that harassment.
Maybe we should look up. If anyone who is listening knows more about this, please send us some more information. We'd love to do a follow up on the story if we can.
There is one thing. Just to be fair, the Canadian Association for the Chief of Police spokesman says that one of the reasons why they're claiming they need this, it's one of the things we need to do is to go out and find out whether or not a crime has been committed, who may have committed that crime, and where evidence may be located. So, in essence, what they're saying is we need this law to find out if a law has been broken, if there's been a crime. The BC Civil Liberties responded to this, and they had, I thought, was a very appropriate quote. They said, "That's like saying we need to come into your house and find out if there's any evidence that there would have been supporting us getting a warrant." They already have the ability to request information, to get warrants, or to demand it if they need under emergency circumstances. So the reason why they don't want to get the warrant is because they don't have enough evidence to get the warrant. And they figure, well, we need this in order to get the evidence for the warrant. But
that's circular.
Yeah.
Right. I think, like, you know, this is an important topic for a skeptical show. Like, this isn't scientific skepticism, but this is, like, we should be skeptical of, like, why they're making this law. And they're trying to, like, convince people that this law is needed. But really, it's just sort of seems like they're trying to take away some freedoms, and it's not really helping to benefit the cause that much.
And actually, we will have a follow-up thing that will deal with, do these laws really work? You know, what about things like child pornography? What about terrorism over the internet? So if anyone has any comments or any information that they'd like about that, please email it to us at our email address, which is...
The email is radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And, Elon?
Oh, sorry, I was just going to say, I remember when I had that whole situation at the border, and then I asked them, why are they searching me? And they said that the main way that people seem to be transporting this content is, like, on laptops across the border. It's like, do you really think that? Like, I'm pretty sure the main way of transporting...
The internet.
...is using the internet, right? Like, who's going to fill up their laptop with child pornography, then cross the border?
Oh, come on. I've seen it. They've had trucks full of laptops carrying pornography across the border.
And crack. Internet crack.
Well, we're almost out of time. So, Rob, please give us a skeptical quote.
All right. Here's a quote from Russ Feingold.
It's pretty related to what we were just talking about.
This is a statement he made in the U.S. Senate on the USA Patriot Act, which is similar and possibly the progenitor of this current act in the Canadian Parliament. "Of course, there is no doubt that if we lived in a police state, it would be easier to catch terrorists. If we lived in a country that allowed the police to search your home at any time for any reason, if we lived in a country that allowed the government to open your mail, eavesdrop on your phone conversations, or intercept your mail communications, if we lived in a country that allowed the government to hold people in jail indefinitely based on what they write or think, or based on mere suspicion that they are up to no good, then the government would no doubt discover and arrest more terrorists. But that probably would not be a country in which we would want to live. And that would not be a country for which we could, in good conscience, ask our young people to fight and die. In short, that would not be America."
Or Canada.
Or will any developed Western democracy, probably.
Indeed.
Well, we're right out of time. So this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don, minds open.
Eyes on or something?
That's it.
This is Elon saying goodbye to everyone, specifically my computer science friends at Tuesday Tea.
And this is Rob saying, have a...